So anyway, so today happens to be a very amazing day because it's sandwiched because Tesvav is the yahrzeit of Rav David, who is Nifter in 41, and Yud Zayin Kislev is the yahrzeit of the Avter from the Vardik. But okay, so we'll talk about the David today anyway, because it's not the Avter's yahrzeit yet. Okay, the Maisa, there's I photocopied a piece from Moshe Chait. Moshe Chait was the Meshiva in Eretz Yisrael, in the Chofetz Chaim branch in Eretz Yisrael. He was Rabbi David Chait's and Baruch Chait's father. He's Rabbi Begida's, Dr. Begida's father-in-law, Rabbi Winter's grandfather. So he's a nice person. Anyway, he was a Talmud of Rav David. One of the amazing, and then later by the Rosh Yeshiva. One of the amazing things about Rabbi Chait, I was in Israel for 14 years as a rabbi there, and I was there before, and every year he spoke at the yard site. And Rav Moshe Chait used to say, every year it came out, I remember him saying it many, many times, and I assume he's telling the truth, not a day goes by that I don't think about my rabbi Rav David. It's a pretty amazing statement. Not a day goes by. You know, I mean, this was like 40, 50 years after Rav David was Nifter. This piece was written, it says, more than 40 years after the Batira. So he says, not a day goes by that he was so close to Rav David that he thought about him every day. The Maisa, Rabbi Chait, was very, very upset that there was no book written about Rav David. It bothered him tremendously because he felt the honor of his Rebbe here that there are so many books written about every single person. And I'm not arguing history. I can't tell you because I wasn't there. But in Rabbi Chait's mind, Rav David should be given the most credit to anybody for bringing Torah to America. Most people today give that credit to Rav Aaron Cutler, and obviously he deserved tremendous credit, and I'm not coming to argue. But Rabbi Chait held that it should have gone to Rav David even more than Rav Aaron, because Rav David started the yeshiva in the 1920s, 27. He became a yeshiva in Tarvad Das. That was the first basic yeshiva. There was a yeshiva in New Haven that was earlier, and then it folded. So then the next first base medrash that existed was in Tarvad Das in 27, and then he opened up Chofetz Chaim in 33 during the middle of the Great Depression. After getting booted out of Tarvad Das, mainly because he wanted to make a real yeshiva, and the Baal Batim in Tarvad Das felt that if you want to have a real yeshiva, go to Europe. We don't need a yeshiva in America. America, you want to teach them a little, you know, a little quick, get them a little one-year program, let them learn a little smicha, but then they don't have to get long-term learning. America doesn't need that. And Rav David was adamant that you need a real yeshiva in America with long-term learning, and that's why, for all those who always wondered why we got that corny name, a Rabbinical Seminary of America, is because Rav David was a statement that there should be an Rabbinical Seminary in America, not only in Europe. That was the Lumdus. So therefore, there was a statement. But Rav David went ahead and he fought for this concept that there should be a yeshiva in America. He started in the 20s and started in the 30s. So Rabbi Chait used to always say, of course, Rav Aaron did amazing things. And Rav David was Nifter in 41, which is really when Rav Aaron sort of came to the scenes. But he felt that the hardest battle was to get people in the 20s and 30s. People were just told the whole idea of yeshiva was crazy. No one even thought of a yeshiva. So Rav David had the uphill battle of starting yeshiva when everyone thought it was totally absurd. Rav Aaron had also a big battle, but he felt that it wasn't as much because it was already the concept. It was after the war. People already came from Europe. Europe was destroyed. People understood that you have to have a yeshiva in America because there was no Europe anymore. And there was already yeshivas were already starting in America. So he felt that it was easier. So again, I'm not coming chas v'shalom to, but just the Rabbi Chait's picture that Rav David should be the primary credit for giving credit to America. The Maisa Rav David, no one ever heard of Rav David. That's, Rav David, one of the hashkafas of the yeshiva is that we run away from Kavod. Rav David told Rosh Hashiva on his deathbed, I think the Rosh Hashiva said it was the last thing he heard from Rav David. The very last thing he heard from Rav David is Rav David told him which kapitel to whom to say. But the thing before that, I think he said Rav David told him, Baruch Hashem, I never got coven in this world. So that was a major hashgah for the yeshiva. What?
Kapitel for
Rav Rav David, which kapitel to him to say for Rav Rav, right? He was sick. So he told him which kapitel. He said, the last thing he said in my Rebbe, the altar said, you say these kapitels. I don't know which one it was. That was the last thing he heard from his Rav David. But I think the thing before is Rav David said, Baruch Hashem, I never got covered. So he never got covered. He never got covered. Rabbi Chait only wanted to write a book about Rav David, and he was collecting, and his whole life he was collecting material, but of course it never came out. He never got around to write it.
Isn't that probably what he wants, Rav David?
What?
Isn't that probably what Rav David wants?
Maybe he didn't want the book. I don't know. Rav David, Rabbi Chait was he ate him up. That here he felt this rabbi was so amazing, no one knew him. And you know, it bothered him. What?
What happened to all the stuff he collected?
I don't know. You have to ask the Chaits, the Chait family. He collected all the Yahrzeit speeches and all the, you know, he was collecting all the shmuzim. He has file cabinets. But he did not want, he felt that only, I remember him saying, we were talking to him, he said, let's hire someone to write. He said, no, only someone who knew Rav David personally could write it, because you have to be, wouldn't be able to write it otherwise. So he wanted to write himself, and I guess it never worked out. Anyway, this piece is a piece Rabbi Chait wrote about Rav David. So let's read it a little bit. The first paragraph is just introduction. First two paragraphs are introduction. Third paragraph. I'm going to say it in English. He says that he remembers that Rav David pointed out to the Bachur in the yeshiva that when they read Sfarim, they skip the introduction. And he says that's very bad because you can't understand the author unless you understand where his background, where he lives, what he lives, where his roots are, what his Messiah is. So that's his introduction, why he feels that you have to know, you know, he wants to say, you can't understand a person without some background. That's his paragraph, Zichroni. Anyway, so just to have a little background. Rav David was born in, you have here the sefer that they put out on that dinner. So he was born in 1889. Okay. Then what happened was he was a great nephew of the Chafetz Chaim. Just a great nephew of Chafetz Chaim means not a great nephew. I mean, it means that not a great, meaning his father was a nephew of the Chafetz Chaim. Right? So he was a nephew. So he was a nephew one generation later. Okay. So when he was 14, he came to Radin to learn by the Chafetz Chaim and Rav Naftali. And he learned with the Chafetz Chaim, the Chavrusa. It says here he learned like 12 hours straight with the Chafetz Chaim, the Chavrusa, for a while. Rabbi Chait, I remember, said, or I think it was Rabbi Chait said, that Rav David felt that there were very few Talmidim of the Chafetz Chaim in the world. Because the Chafetz Chaim, those who know the Chafetz Chaim, founded Yeshivat Radin, but he didn't have time to run it because he was busy with all his other projects, including writing the Mishneh Berurah, et cetera, et cetera. And therefore, on a daily basis, he didn't really have time for Talmidim. He did occasionally say it like a weekly shmooze in Radin. The guy, the Talmidim, came to his house and he said a shmooze. But he didn't really deal with the Talmidim privately. So he said that even people that say they're a Talmidim and a Chafetz Chaim, it just meant that they had some shaykhs, obviously some more than others. You know, so Zuckerman thought he was a Talmidim. I don't want to belittle it. But Rav David, there were very few people that actually learned with the Chafetz Chaim. He said Rav David learned, I think it says here, 12 hours a day for like a year or two with the Chafetz Chaim. It didn't find it exactly, because when the Chafetz Chaim was preparing the Mishneh Berurah, so he learned with him the Chavrusa for a while. I don't see where it says it. I'm sorry. Okay. What? I think Hilchos Sukkah. I think so. What? Yeah, where is that? Oh, it's here. From what time? What is it? Yeah, so that's 12 hours. From 9 to 9. So they learned 12 hours. And how long did he say he learned with him? Shinatayim, for 2 years. He turned 2 years with the Chofetz Chaim. So he obviously was mushpa by the Chofetz Chaim. The derech of learning of Rav David was from the Granat, which was a very unique derech in Iyun. And then, at some point, he left to go to Salbaka. It seems the way the story I heard from the Reshiva is that the Chofetz Chaim gave him a letter when he left Radin, that in learning he's complete, but he's going for the Musar. Because he wanted, there was a special derech ha-Musar of Salbaka. So he joined Salbaka, and it says here, I'm reading my he came to Salbaka in 1908. Okay, he was around almost a 19. In 1912, he was sent from the altar for 6 months to learn in a new yeshiva, I can't pronounce it, under Hagoyin Rav Moshe Salvechik. Rav Moshe Salvechik was one of the sons of Rav Chaim. Rav Chaim had, I don't know how many sons. The more famous son is Rav Elbo, but Rav Elbo's older brother was Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe later came to America, and became, I don't know if there was a college yet, but he came to Shiva of what would later became Shiva University, and Rav Yashabir was his son. So Rav Shiva learned by Rav Moshe and Rav David and Rav Shiva. Rav Shiva told us that Rav David said that during those 6 months, he learned the Briskadera to the point that if you would show him a Rambam and you would tell him that Rav Chaim spoke on this Rambam, it's like a guy who knows Mishiva and Musadera. So if I show you a Rashi, I say Rav Shiva has a shmooth on this Rashi, you know, you can figure out what Rav Shiva said. Could it be? Let me see. Yeah, all right, so that's the shmooth. So he said, you showed him a Rambam, and you told him that Rav Chaim speaks on this Rambam, he was so attuned to Rav Chaim's Zerach that he could tell you what Rav Chaim said, obviously without ever seeing it. Because he knew the Derech of Bris so much. Okay, so he spent 6 months by Rav Moshe. So that was also a Rebbe of his. So he learned, main Rebbe was a Granat, but he also learned by Rav Moshe Salvechik. And then he married a certain, in 1915, and he became the Rav of the city. I can't pronounce any of these names, so I don't know, I'm just skipping it. So, and they, whatever it is. Now, what happened was, he married some lady. Rivka Leia Sereshki. Okay. Then what happened was, about 7 years, this was during World War I, which sort of broke out during those periods. After World War I ended, they refounded, there was no kolos, and there was only one kolo, I think, came out in all Europe. People don't realize that the idea of kolo is basically not a European thing. In Europe, the idea was that your father-in-law supported you. But there was only one kolo, the Covenant Kolo. I think so. Maybe it was more, but basically, one famous kolo. What? I don't know. Not for But anyway, the famous kolo, the Kolo Covenant. So after World War I, they restarted in 1922. So Rav David joined that kolo. Now that was a big thing because in order to join the kolo, he had to give up his position of a rav. And in Europe, there were very, very few positions. There were no yeshivas, come out very few yeshivas, a few yeshivas, which were obviously all taken in positions, and every city only had one rav. So that was a minhag in Europe. So there were many, many gedolim that did not have positions. For example, the Torah Tamima, who went to Gedolei Ador, worked as a banker because he writes he had no position. So he says the Rebbe, the Netziv, was very upset. He made him promise he would write Svarim to keep him in learning. But he had to go because he had a position. So Rav David had a position. He took over his father-in-law's Rabbanus, but he gave it up to rejoin the Kodo, which was considered a tremendous Mesiras Nefesh. Okay, then the Kodo, the rule of the Kodo was that when you finish learning the Kodo was, I don't know how many years exactly, 5 years approximately, something like that, I don't know exactly. The rule of the Kodo was that when you finish learning the Kodo was obviously had no money, so you had to dedicate a certain amount of time to raise funds for the Kodo, so for the next guy. So, and they would ask you like to either go to America or other places. So Rav David came to America in 1926 to be Yotzi his Chiyuv for the Kodo. That's the same reason why Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, who was his good Chaver, came to America also to raise money for the Kolo. And he came in America, so he was offered to be the Yeshiva at Torah B'Das. Torah B'Das was just opening a yeshiva. They had a high school, and they were first opening the Beis Medrash. Again, I think it was like at that time was the only Beis Medrash, I believe, in America. They were opening a Beis Medrash. They asked Rav David to be the Shiva. The famous story, if you have to know the famous brainwashed story, is that at that time there was a very big gadol in America called the Kovner Rav. The Kovner Rav wrote the Sefer Dvar Avram. He was one of the good, he was the Rav of Kovner. He was one of the Gedolei Ador. And they asked him who they should pick to the Rosh Hashiva to be Torah B'Das. And he told them there was some, at that time there was the Major Tzeidui was in America. The Major Tzeidui was, they say, Rav Chaim said he was the biggest Idui of the whole generation. Obviously, brilliant. Question is whether he was, you know, another Einstein, so to speak, but in learning, the biggest Idui. And so the Dvar Avram said, if you wanted to become world famous overnight, you should take the Matrix of Idui, because you'll get the word going out that you have this greatest Idui in the world, your Rosh Hashiva. But if you want a good Rosh Hashiva, you should take Rav David. So they took Rav David, and they hired him. The Maisa, as we know, I don't want to say it wasn't a successful shidduch, but the Maisa, Rav David had a very strong hashpon, the Talmidim, and there was a little bit of a disagreement with some of the Baal Batim of how to run the yeshiva. And, you know, there were different areas of disagreement. Part of it was probably, you know, as I said, Rav David held there should be a long-term learning. They thought it should be more short-term learning. Some of the Baal Batim were more Hasidish. Rav David wanted more Ian. They wanted more Bikiyas. And I think the biggest machlekes was who's the boss. Rav David held that, excuse me, I'm the Rosh Hashiva, I'm the Gadol Hador, you're a bunch of Amoratzim. So when it comes to decide matters of the yeshiva, obviously I decide. You're not going to ask, you know, just because you give the money doesn't mean you know nothing about yeshivas. And they felt, you know, we give the money, we decide. So I don't say all of them, but some of them. So there was a little bit room for machlekes. You can hear why there'd be room for machlekes. And eventually Rav David left or got kicked out, not sure exactly. And he started his own yeshiva. And basically all the Talmidim of Torah B'Das went with him, pretty much. Except for Rabbi Pam, I think, who Rav David told him to stay in Torah B'Das. Says he wanted to come, but Rav David told him to stay. Because he was married already. And Rav David said, I can't afford it. I can't take the achrayas for a married person. Okay, anyway. But anyway, so that was, they started Chavetz Chaim in 33, in the middle of the Depression, which was obviously very difficult. And according to, it was the tremendous Mesiras Nefesh. Shiva said that he remembers days that there was mamish no food in the house, which is not exactly true. He said that the Rav David always had a bowl of fruit on the table. And if they guys asked God this Adam, and if people would come to the house, you know, they were welcome, you know, to help yourself to fruit. But he wasn't allowed to eat it because they really couldn't afford it. And there were days that there was no food. He had no food. But he would need no food. But a guy from the come visit and then just help himself to an apple while he's starving. But there was no food in the house. And I remember he said that for Yontif, David could not afford a new, what's it called, a jacket, frock. So what he used to do is he used to change the sleeves because the sleeves used to get a hole in it. So this part used basically stayed okay. But the sleeves, after it was 6 months, a year, would get worn out, get a hole in them. So the big splurge on Yontif, he would get new sleeves for his frock. You know, pretty tremendous aniyas that they had. We said starting the yeshiva in the Depression, there was no, you know, I think they said David was like the janitor, the secretary, and everything in between. He did, you know, ran the whole yeshiva. And the Maisa, he was Nifter in 41 on Pearl Harbor Day. Right? That was at the age of 52, which was very relatively young, pretty young for, you know. And at that point, the Yeshiva was in his young 20s. I don't know exactly how old he was. I'll tell you, because based on here, I can figure that out. because they have here when he was born. He was born in 1916. So his father was Nifter in 41. That makes him, what, 25? 24. Okay. So he was around 24, 25 when Rav David was Nifter. He took over the yeshiva, which was a pretty amazing thing, because if you think about it, or if you know what about it, was at that time there were many gedolim of Gedolei HaDor who were in America, because people were running away from Europe, and many of these Gedolei HaDor did not have positions yet. Later, some of them became famous gedolim, like Rav Aaron Cutler, like Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, and many other people. But the Maisa, Rashiva became the Rosh Yeshiva, who was in his young 20s. It was pretty wild. Many people were like shocked, but that's sort of what happened. Rav Aaron might have already had it started the Kodo. He started a Kodo in Lakewood, but he maybe had like 10 people. Wasn't like really.
Did he have Tommy
them
like older than
him? Who, Rav Yeshiva? Probably. I assume so. They were the famous Talmidim were the London brothers, which I don't know. There's a wedding coming up next week. They're marrying one in London, so.
It's from that family.
Yes, from that family. Ategi. But that's a grand. There were some people. There was a Rabbi Friend, who the Yad Paltio, for those who know. And then there was. There was a number of Talmidim that were, obviously, the Chait brothers. Rosh Chenech was a Talmid when Rav David was Nifter, so he took over.
How did they let him take over?
Because his father apparently appointed him to take over. And why would his father appoint him to take over? Because apparently he felt that he would be true to the Derech, and rather other people, he didn't think would be true to that Derech they were trying to teach.
Why would he appoint him at such a young age?
Because Rav David got sick. He didn't die suddenly. Rav David got sick, got a heart condition, and he couldn't function in the yeshiva. And so he appointed his son, knowing that his son, obviously Rav Shiva was extremely talented. I once heard Rav Shiva say, I don't want to get off on a different tangent, but he once said that basically most of the real Gedolei HaDor, just so we shouldn't get to our hopes up. He said most of the most famous Gedolei HaDor knew they were Gedolei HaDor when they were like 20 years old. I was at the Levaya for Rav Moshe, we had a Hesped for Rav Moshe. They said Rav Moshe said he knew it was going to be the Gedolei HaDor when he was 13. The shot is that some of these Gedolim had such, Rav Moshe's son said, well, I don't remember which son, they had a Hesped for Rav Moshe in the yeshiva, and both sons spoke. And one of the sons said that Moshe told him that when he was 13, he knew it was going to be the next Gedolei HaDor. The pshat is that many of these Gedolim had crazy brains. And so when they're already 20 years old, you knew, they were like just crazy brains, So Rav Shiva obviously had an unusual brain. It was just not your normal brain. So he was appointed when he was 20. That's so crazy. Not really so crazy. And Rav David felt he wanted to keep the derech, and Rav Shiva had the derech. So when he was sick, he appointed Rav Shiva to be, what I heard from Rabbi Chait, is Rav David got there sick, he couldn't teach, and then they came up with a new procedure called an open heart surgery, which was a brand new procedure. And since it was a brand new procedure, it was very risky. And there was a shaida whether Rav David should take it. And Rav David went through the sugya, and because it's putting his life in sakana, and he paskin that he should take it because if he can't teach Torah, lamed chayim, and he took the operation, he got better, he came back to the yeshiva, and he was able to give shir a little bit, but then he got an infection in his heart from the operation, and he was nifter from that. That was before they had antibiotics. So the Maisa, but the point of Rashiva came to Rashiva, we're not talking that this is not about the Rashiva though, so we're supposed to be in Rav David. Okay, anyway, let's read here about what Rabbi Chait wrote about Rav David. Okay, I'm skipping down to Bezikron Ishiyuso. The next and last paragraph on the first page. Remembering his personality. Bilti nishkachas hi ha'avo ha'aza. It's not forgettable. The strong love. I shouldn't read this because the guys are going to be angry at me. But okay. The strong love. Sheheret tamid, that he always showed with Bnei HaTorah to any Talmud Ben Torah, Beklau, in general. Ule Talmidim Bepran, and especially to Talmidim. Belid is chashev, without taking consideration, afilo kosho, even a drop, in kishron haTalmud Yosef, based on his intellect. Means it didn't only, you're a genius, you're so smart, I love you, you're going to be the next God of the door. Even if the Talmud was very shvach, he had tremendous love in him. Befip shuto, simply, who is I ben Torah, he loved the ben Torah, ach v'ram neshu hoiz ben Torah, because you're learning Torah, I love you. So it doesn't make a difference how smart you are. Not relevant. Morgan up epiv, something he used to always say. Morgan up is something he used to always say. Sheesh b'yameinu ove Torah b'chavaser. There are many people in every place that love Torah. Avo ove ben Torah, kashin himself. Right? The sharp line. People love Torah. Simchas Torah, they'll dance with the Torah. But do they respect the ben Torah, yeshiva guy? You know? He's a... Rabbi Chait used to say about himself, that when he got married, he couldn't go to any family weddings because people looked so down on him. Well, you're not working, you're still living in yeshiva. What's wrong with you? That he was so embarrassed, he couldn't go to a family wedding. He also said, I just cute, that when his first son was born, they couldn't afford a crib, so they emptied out the bottom drawer of the dresser, and that was the crib. You know, live in America, yeah. What? A while. In the mid-40s, probably. Okay. And he says, okay, then he told his father-in-law that also they had this tremendous love for a ben Torah. Okay. So now the next paragraph. Hagav Shabbin on Oshak Lanustan. Kibish Gasha. He says, the David did not kiss the Talmidim. I don't know why, but I would suspect that because Rav David was probably very aristocratic. She was also something, a quirk that people don't know. She was not American, he was European. And they were very, Europe is like a class society. Europe is not like America where everyone's equal. So they were very aristocratic, there were people that were aristocratic, which means they were very, there's certain chashivas. Like, I'll give you an example. When I first became the Yeshiva's secretary, so I was told the job that I should bring the cup of water to Yeshiva in the when he's giving shir, you know, in the middle of shir, bring a cup of water. So I bring him a cup of water, so a David Chait said, no, you can't bring the Yeshiva a cup of water like that. Because you put your fingers on the cup, you expect he's going to drink it? You have to put on a plate and carry the plate. You know, I probably carried it from the top, you know, like, you know, she was not going to drink it like that. You know, bring him a cup of water, but you had your fingers on it, you're going to drink it. So she was a real bit of an aristocratic person. I don't know. Maybe it was God that saw them, maybe it was just his upbringing, but Rav David was probably also very aristocratic. It was like a choshev mishpacha. What? No, that was how the... Anyway, so I suspect he didn't kiss because if they got that part of that aristocratic part. He didn't kiss germs, I don't know. But he said, even though he didn't kiss, so you can't blame me, I don't kiss. Mikomako, or Ava, the love, Shehevrika Tami Mitoch Einov, the love that shined from his eyes. If Bechira, that was so clear, Chodra miyad etol toshav seinu. Just the David's eyes bored into us, not because he was staring at us, because we could see the love in his eyes. We'll never forget the love of his eyes. The avos lezut nisano takas hashpahaso. This love made us want to be under his hashpah. Okay. Who is Ado Afirak Bezosha Melamed? He took all the pride only in one thing, that he's a Melamed. In other words, this Rashi is saying the same thing, that the most glorious position in the world is to be a Melamed. right? The famous story, which is many, many times said over in the yeshiva, is that Reb David started the yeshiva, and a certain gadol yeshiva never told the name, so I can't say, but it was obviously one of the gedolei ador that I think we all heard of, but I don't know if we all heard of. He said it seemed to be a very big gadol. Came to America, and he was a friend of Reb David, or knew Reb David from Europe, and he came to Reb David. I said, I heard you have a yeshiva, you know, so you know I'm here to help. So Reb David told him that regretfully, you know, the yeshiva, you know, Beardy can make ends meet, and we can only can't cover another salary. So I can't, you know, you want to work for free, okay, but you won't be able to survive. Can't pay another salary. So I would love you to help in the yeshiva, but I can't afford another salary. So Reb David told him, you know, what I advise you to do is to become a melame. It means a melame means they used to have, they didn't have schools then, weren't so many yeshivas. So you had private tutors, and they would teach Auerbeis to kids. So he told this Gadol Dor to become like an Auerbeis Rebbe, Malami. So this Gadol apparently got insulted, and he said, you know, I should be a Malami. You be a Malami. So David said, if I didn't have the yeshiva, I would be a Malami. I'm ready to be a Malami. Except Hashem gave me the job in yeshiva, so I took the job in yeshiva. But if I wouldn't have the job in yeshiva, be a melamed. You don't have the job in yeshiva, you should be a melamed. Reb David, by the way, was known to be very outspoken. That he spoke his mind. That's why sometimes he got into trouble with some people without getting into more of the stories. But he spoke his mind. So I guess, I'm not telling you. No. He was. Now, a different story. Not about this. About not speaking. Rabbi Chay used to say that Reb David did apparently at one time when he first sent a letter to Europe to someone to help him in the yeshiva. Maybe it was before this ma'isa. Sometime he thought he could get someone. I don't know. It's Akasha, because here he told the guy he couldn't afford. So I guess different times. So he got a letter back from this person, and the person wrote Reb David that, you know, of course I would love to leave the poverty of Europe and come to the riches of America, but I'm not ready to give up my Olam Haba for Olam Hazeh, basically. That's what the person wrote. So Reb David took the letter to the yeshiva, and he read it to the guys, and he said, this person got it all mixed up. He thinks that America is Olam Haza and Europe is Olam Haba. But it's backwards. He says Europe is Olam Haba. Here in America, they don't makshiv. I mean, Europe is Olam Haza, right? Because here in America, they don't makshiv you. They don't makshiv a Talmud Chacham. People treat you like dirt. You know, so there's no Olam Haza here. You have to kill yourself, you know. But Olam Haba, you know, the schus, the bringing Torah to America, that's where the schus is. So the Olam Haba is in America, and the Olam Haza is in Europe. Right? And then the last story, as long as I'm just rattling off stories, there's a different story that they also wrote someone, to. This is just a funny story, nothing doing anything, that they wrote to some other gadol that Reb David knew, that they made a shidduch for a yeshiva, and that this gadol sent his daughter to America to marry the Rosh Hashiva. Apparently there was maybe there weren't any Roy Shaduchim in America, so he had a certain chavre, was a tremendous gadol in Europe, and they, you know, she figured marry their daughter. So obviously they wouldn't go out for it, but it was sort of understood that they would get married. The Maisa didn't get married because she eloped with a sailor on the boat.
She
won. Eloped with a sailor. Right. Right. In other words, the probability is that she wasn't such a frum girl, whatever, and she took the advantage of this opportunity to run away from her father. I don't know. She told her father she's going to marry the yeshiva, and she had no intention of marrying some Rosh Hashiva in America, so she quickly eloped with some sailor. I don't know exactly. That's just all I know of this story. Just a wild story.
The Rishiva used to quote this?
I don't know. I don't remember how I heard this story. Rishiva was very, One of the fascinating things about the Shiva was he was very open. He told very, very personal things about himself. And that was, I think, Ashkafa, because if you feel close to someone, you don't keep secrets. That is, and actually, where does it say that? We're going way off the topic. It's the Rabag in this week's Parsha, right? Because the Rabag, Shaya Kohn, famous Shmuz, that the Rabag says, Vayishlach Yaakov v'Esav, and he tells him how many Chamorim, Tahiri Shor v'Chamor, Eved v'Shivcha. So what is he telling him? What does Esav care? So Rashi says a whole pshat, I'll be remez, and Shor is merame to this, and Chamor is merame to this. But the Rabag says his whole thing was to try and get Esav to like him. So he was showing Esav, look, I'm your good friend. When you have a good friend, you know, if someone you don't think friendly, you don't tell them, oh, I have so much money. You know, you don't tell it to your enemies. But to your good friend, who you're sure he'll be happy for your luck, so he'll be happy. So I'm sure you'll be happy that I made it big. I'm telling you how rich I am, because I know how lucky we love each other, and you'll be happy. So the Rabbag says that the way of making friendships is by being open, not like people that are secretive. People that are secretive do not make, you know, it's a sign that I don't trust you. So anyway, she was very open. And he did tell a lot of funny stories, that it would be personal stories. He told me once, just for the record, telling crazy stories and going off nothing, that he heard the doctors pronounce him dead. Rashi had a lot of serious medical conditions, especially when he was young. And he says once, basically the doctor thought he was dead. So he was apparently paralyzed, you know, couldn't move. And he heard the doctors examine him and say he's dead. But I don't know. I know it's a little shake, and a little shakes you up. You know, when you hear the doctor pronouncing you dead, when you're not dead. You know, but at least you don't think you're dead. But I don't know. I don't know if you're really sure. I don't know what you know. Maybe it's my neshama is there. And, you know, I don't know what you think. But you heard the doctor say that he's dead. And, you know. Anyway, but okay. The worst story about Rav David being, Rav David was not afraid to speak his mind.
Or she even said those stories?
I heard some stories. I don't remember from who. Two people that he disagreed with.
Avin Dolim?
Avin Dolim, or, yeah.
Why does everyone want to say?
Because I don't want to say. What am I going to say? Well, then I'll tell you why I don't want to say. Okay, you know, come on. Okay, anyway, so it says here that he thought that the greatest thing is to be a melamed. There's a story, there's a letter here from Rav David. That Rav David sent a letter that he went down to Miami. We have a Messira that Rav David came to Miami in 1939. What? He planted seeds. Like Sarah went to Mitzrayim, you know. So anyway, but Rav David came to Miami to fundraise for the Chavad Yeshiva. He came down to Miami. Yeshiva used to tell the story, and this has nothing to do with anything, but it's just as long as I'm going off in Yenacher, that there was a house in Miami where Mishalachim stayed. So Rav David stayed in this house, and apparently there was a Chassidus Rebbe was also fundraising with his gabbai, and at the same house. And Rav Shiva used to always tell over this story, they heard from Rav David, that they were sitting in this house at the end of the day, and the Rebbe and his gabbai were dividing up the money that they collected, and they got into an argument how the percentages, you know, the Rebbe felt he should get more, and the gabbai said they should divide it halfway. So he said, Rav David heard that the gabbai told the Rebbe, if you don't give me a fair share, I'm going to tell on you. In other words, the Rebbe was not as big as a tzaddik as he made out to be. So the gabbai said, he didn't say, he just was shooting one of the big, it was very funny. That the gabbai told him, if you better give me my share, else I'm going to tell everyone the truth. Anyway, but the famous story about Rabbi went to after it is that there was a Rabbi Gewurz. He was one of the people he used to always speak at the yard sites. Rav Zalta Gewurz was a close davener of David, who was a Rav in Waterbury, Connecticut, in the old days. And then he was very close to Rav Gifter. He was very close to Rav Gifter. Rav Gifter was a Rav in Waterbury, Connecticut. And Rav Gewurz gave Rav Gifter the position originally, probably why they're very close. But then when Rav Gifter went to Telz, to Yeshiva, so he gave it back to Rabbi Gewurz. And then at some point, Rabbi Gewurz became the executive director of Telz. He was an amazing speaker too. Rabbi Chait and Rabbi Gewurz were very amazing speakers. And Rabbi Gewurz used to come to Yeshiva for the yard site, and he used to have a line that he used to always say. He apparently went down with Rav David to Miami, and he went down by train. They went the train down to Miami. So they were together, and apparently it was a sleeping train, because there wasn't that many, you know. So he used to say, I saw my Rebbe in his gashkes, which I don't know what gashkes are, but I think it means his underwear. Anyway, he says, I saw my Rebbe in his gashkes, and I still have more respect for him than any of you people. Right. That was his line. Okay, anyway. What? I can't hear you. Gashkes means I got the wrong translation. I really don't know what gashkes means, but I don't know. Okay. Anyway, what's very interesting in this piece, I feel like a yenta. He has a schmooze here on Yevamos. It's really interesting because it's Yevamos. So it's Yevamos and Yevamos. If you look down here at the end of Kuf Samachtes, he says they were learning Yevamos, and Rav David gave a schmooze. What was his schmooze? His schmooze was on why the Gemara spends so much time in Michle Kudo Meachos Isha Yafinin, Vitne Achos Isha Bereisha. Like it says, the whole Gemara on why this wasn't written first, the order of the Tesva of Arayas. He says, who cares what the order is? So they wrote it the order, they picked an order, why? So he says, what you basically see from here is that Seder is extremely important, that Seder is, the Gemara held that Seder is you have to have Seder. Seder is it's not just some random. Who cares the order? It's the last line. Believe Seder, Yevsha Lover, the Avana Yishar Baomek Torah Sein HaKadosha. Without Seder, you can't understand Torah properly. Okay. What? Order. Proper order. So the Gemara wanted to know why they picked the order of the Mishnah. Because you're supposed to do things orderly. A person with an orderly brain, you know, your brain's supposed to be orderly. You're supposed to, that's part of thinking properly. So if Eishasach, Achos Ishto should be first, then it should be written first. The brain should be in orderly. You know, it's like a plia tsuma. Okay. Anyway, then what else does he say here? Big chiddush, that's so important. All right, anything, then he goes off in Derech Eretz Kadma Netaira. And let's look at the end here. He says, in the paragraph of Yisayin, I got a few minutes, so we'll start reading from there. A very interesting piece. Paragraph beside the third line. Pam Sha'anu es Rabbeinu. Once we asked Rav David, Lama Barov Sichos of Umadgish Pitzmidus, he emphasized always as Rabbein Adam Lechavero, both in Yosher and Mukhish. He talks always smoothly about Ben Adam Lechavero. Vida Gai Ben Adam Lechavero, Hoyanir Lanokidu Nigash Vakifin. But Ben Adam Lechavero, he barely talks about. It's only like indirectly. He said, you know, that it goes to Ben Adin Amakam. I had this big problem with the Chiddush Alev. And the Chiddush Alev, I wanted to make an index to the Chiddush Alev. And it was very embarrassing because all these shmuzim on all these Musar topics, Ben Adin Chavero, Chesed, Habatzah Torah, Gaiva, Nova, and then when I got to Yerushamayim, and Tom, you know, like almost like no schmoozing. I mean, like, it just didn't look good. So I didn't know, I had a problem. So he's basically saying that I probably bluffed it. You know, You had one line somewhere. Yeah, okay. I don't know. I don't remember. I remember having the problem. So the mice, he said that they asked his kasha to Rav David. So look at his answer. The last paragraph. Kisara avamuka. Short but deep. Tistaklo kamikoshe lanu avoida. How hard it is for us. Lahasik is hargosha anachoina. Hadrusha the kaimis ayachas amusri chavreinu. Hakrevin lanu. And him son Tom and Mamish Ayadinov as a son in law with hates. In other words, there's a din of after Akla Kamoicha is you're supposed to treat your friend like yourself. Yeah, and here our friend is right with us and we know him and we see him and it's so hard. Koka Posha Baruhu. It's so obvious, he's right there. You can see him. And Bechodam they show him Bechol Rega, but every second we're short. We're missing. And even though we try hard to be kind of after we don't understand the Mahu Samuel Kim. We don't appreciate the godness of every person. So therefore it's hard to give care for them because you're I don't respect you. So why should I love you? But if you saw that Samuel Kim, you would love him. So we don't see that Samuel Kim in a person that's in front of us. If we can't even see the goddess of a person who's standing in front of us, if we can't appreciate the goddess of a person who's we can see with our own flesh and we see with our eyes, you think you can appreciate what Hashem is? He says that Hashem is harder to understand. So how can you come to think you're going to have Yiras Shamayim and think about Hashem if you can't even comprehend a person? He says, and the only way to really come to understand Hashem is to see the greatness in people and then project it onto Hashem. And so he's saying like this. Let's go look into the next paragraph. Nimsano lemeidim. We learn out from this. She after lagia la Aleph Beis. Aleph Beis means the beginning. Shel Ben Adam Namakom. You can't reach anything in Ben Adam Namakom. Im lo yisbayer v'yisamisano aderech eretz kadmet lechol. First, you gotta have Ben Adam lechaveiro, and then you can get to Ben Adam Namakom. So therefore, the ikker is to work on Ben Adam lechaveiro because Ben Adam lechaveiro is the stepping stone to Ben Adam Namakom, because Ben Adam Chavero means to work on appreciating the Tzalm Elokim, which you can, if you work on, you can see, and then you can understand, wow, if that's the Tzalm Hashem, that Hashem created each person, imagine Hashem Tzalm Elokim. And that allows you to be proper Ben Adam Namakom.
Can you give an example of that?
I don't know. You look at it, and you see what an amazing person you are. Smart, handsome, beautiful meadows, beautiful bow tie, right? Everything you got. And then you say, Mada, if you got that, imagine what Hashem has. No? No, you have such amazing meadows. You have such refinement. You have such a good heart. There's every person has naturally a good heart. You care about people. You have a desire to do what's right. When you do something wrong, you feel guilty, right? There's a certain lev tov that a person naturally has. Now, where do these come from? We say, someone once told me, I don't know if this is pshat or drush, it says, in the Rosh Hashanah davening, we say, Mikamocha Avarachamim. So someone said Avarachamim means that simple pshat means a father who has rachmanis. But someone said, maybe it's Jewish, I don't know, but it might be right pshat. Avarachamim, and he's the father of rachmanis. Whereas a person has rachmanis is a natural midah in a person. If you see someone suffering, it's instinctive. You have rachmanis. Right. An ani comes knocking on your door. Even if you're a mean, cruel guy, and he starts telling you, always starts. You give him $50, and just get lost and never come back again. But you still give him the money. Because even the cruel guy can't help himself but have rachmanis. So I'm upset that you're bothering me and making me have Rachmanis and losing $50, but I can't help myself. So Rachmanis is an inborn midah. So where does that inborn midah come from? It's Avarachamim. Comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the midah of Selam Elokim, gives us the midah's toivitz of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the midah of Rachmanim comes from Hashem. Therefore, we have Rachmanim. So that's what we're saying. Any good midah that you have, which although is from a miniature from Hashem. So when the more you appreciate people, and you're supposed to, that's Gadis HaAdam, and that's Avas, after Reacha Kamocha, is supposed to, real Ava is supposed to come because you appreciate the person's godless. Why should I love you? If you're a monkey, why should I love you? Says you're not a monkey, you're an amazing person. So I love you. So the when I realize your greatness, and then I know where your greatness comes from. I'm sorry. And I get your greatness comes from Hashem, so I understand where Hashem's greatness. What?
Our godless or our friend's godless?
Even your friend's godless too. Yeah, it's after Reacha Kamocha to recognize your friend's godless. And he's saying when you work on the mitzvah of chesed to recognize your friend's godless, as far as I say, it's easier to see sometimes your friend's godless than your own godless. Because you're also, because yourself, you have the gears, and you're so upset with your chesrainus, so you don't, you know, there's human nature, you know, like you get angry at your chesrainus, it shadows that you don't appreciate who you are. That's
godless in many versions of Hashem's godless. Why is it easier to see a person's godless than Hashem's godless?
Because you're with Hashem and with a person in the same world. Your roommates with a person. You talk to a person. You see him and
he's all the chesed Hashem.
Yeah, but you don't see it as much. And that's what he's saying. It's much more. This is with your own eyes. You see him much more concrete. It's more real.
You see a person negative. You don't see Hashem.
Okay, but if you would, okay, I hear. Anyway, that's what he said. So he said, all right, anyway, that's it. So Yeshikayah, next week I have to do the out in the Vardic.
Isn't the Vardic not at the Seder as much?
No, the Vardic was not at the Seder.
Seder of God, or just
the Vardic was not at the Seder. So Kedushas HaBrachos was not at the Seder so much either.
But even they didn't have a Seder. But